Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Welcome again, Jennifer, to our home, and where we live on Sundays at least. It's good to have you here. It's also good to note in your biography the many intersections in your life and in our lives as we, each of us have grown to come to where we're at. If you haven't had a time to read it, don't read it during Sarah's message, Jennifer's message. Don't read against during Sarah's message either. But that is, I wanted to make everyone aware that Jennifer and Sarah are long-term friends of at least 8 years. So another big intersection.
The only way out is through. In this week of which we have stood witness to the corruption of power, in this week in which the desires of the privileged have bulldozed their way through a mountain of anger, sorrow, and pains of millions in our citizenry, in this week, our country is experiencing yet again the repercussions of relived trauma. Many of us in our own psyches and in our circles of loved ones. In this week in which the outright dismissal and worse yet mockery of a survivor who with courage dared to publicly accuse her abuser was met with cheers. In this week, which has been for some the final sign that we are descending into utter despotic insanity, I lift up for you the voice of Jason Kander, a man who, on what some would call the brink of greatness, took a step back because he understood moving forward and pretending would not only keep him from the healing he needed, but would potentially harm others. I ask us to hold this example of a politician who, in his discernment, considered the greater good and urge us to remember that hope is not lost, that human integrity is not lost, that the practice of our greatest strength coming through our vulnerability is not lost. This is the part of the sermon that I usually like to insert a joke because we need to laugh for a moment, especially when you're visiting a congregation where you do not know one another, partly so you learn that there is some fun within this rather serious preacher of righteous anger, but also become because we insert those pauses because we forget to breathe. And laughter usually gives us a moment to catch our breath. We beings who depend on oxygen to live often forget to breathe. So let's take a moment again, as we have throughout the service, to take another deep breath. And I invite you, at any point as you need it, to return to this breath and return to it as we continue holding one another in this breath, as we talk together and support one another in talking about hard things. The only way out is through. I can recall having anxiety attacks as young as age 8, but it was at 15 that what I now understand was the disease of clinical depression began to spread and damage my body, of which my brain is a part. For a short time in my teenage years, I received some care from a psychologist, but it was thought that my sadness and my stress was situational. And so after I was accepted into the college that I desired for undergrad, I was deemed okay. But the illness had not been informed of this diagnosis. I continued to have acute feelings of hopelessness, unworthiness, loneliness, as well as what could at times be paralyzing anxiety. These episodes came every few months throughout my college years and into my mid-20s, all while I maintained a 3.74 GPA, a dean scholarship, an active presence in my sorority and campus life, a couple long-term romantic relationships. It was college, in some instances, the long-term part is relative. I became the first reporter hired out of my broadcast journalism graduating class cohort, and when I found that career wasn't what I had wished, I moved to New Jersey with two suitcases and $500 with the help of one of those people in those long-term relationships. And by age 25, I had worked in Manhattan, because if you can make it there, was settled into a dependable marketing job in New Jersey, and had just returned home to the faith tradition of which I have been raised. Within 5 months of my joining what became my Unitarian Universalist home congregation, I was presenting in the pulpit. By all outside appearances, I was an outgoing, smart, confident, successful, fun-loving individual, and I was all that. And I still am. But there remained an insidious infection that I could not shake. And even when I thought I had willed it away, it would in time return and twist how I thought of myself. It altered what I thought I deserved and caused fear to what fate I might be destined. I told no one. For even worse than this utter torment was my fear that if I spoke any of these thoughts aloud, it would make them true. I would become weak, an embarrassment, worthless, unloved, crazy. There's a virus spreading across America, shares the National Alliance on Mental Illness in this year's Cure Stigma campaign. It harms the 1 in 5 Americans affected by mental health conditions. It shames them into silence. It prevents them from seeking help, and in some cases, it takes lives. What virus are we talking about? Stigma. Stigma against people with mental health conditions, but there is good news. Stigma is 100% curable. Compassion, empathy, and understanding are the antidote. Your voice can spread the cure. Recent statistics show that 43.8 million American adults, that's over 18% of our population, will experience a mental illness this year. By mental illness, we mean an anxiety disorder, attention deficit or hyperactivity disorder, bipolar disorder, an illness that typically includes extreme shifts in mood, energy, and functioning. Depression, eating disorders, obsessive compulsive disorder, an anxiety disorder where the person experiences intrusive irrational thoughts that appear repeatedly in their mind. Post-traumatic stress disorder, as Jason Kander mentioned, based on the traumatic events that one may have that can be long-lasting. And schizophrenia, a serious illness where a person experiences psychotic symptoms, hallucinations, delusions, emotional flatness, and trouble with thinking processes. Half of all chronic mental illness begins by age 14. 3/4 by age 24. And despite effective treatment, there's been shown that there are long delays, sometimes decades, between first appearance of symptoms and when people get help. For 1 in 25 of us, mental illness will substantially interfere or limit our activities this year. But only 41 of us experiencing illness or a mental health condition will receive the medical services we need. A great deal of this is because of stigma, but I also would like us not to forget the importance of access to services and the disparities that exist within them. Communities comprised predominantly by people of color have less access to treatment, and when they do, it is often of poorer quality of care in a culturally insensitive health system where they experience racism, including language barriers and lower rates of health insurance. For our LGBTQ communities who have 2 to 3 times the need of mental health services than straight people, especially our teens, in attempting to receive care, they experience homophobia and discrimination. Transgender people and others who identify outside a gender binary report being denied care by mental health clinics. If you feel so called, you can find additional information at NAMI.org, including ways you can advocate for yourself and for others. But the barriers and stigma that currently exist means that today, 18 to 22 United States veterans will die by suicide. It means that the second leading cause of death for people aged 15 to 34 is suicide. Only second to what is called unintentional injury, car wrecks. And suicide is the third leading cause of death for children ages 10 to 14. From those age ranges, we lost at least 12,847 beings of light, human beings, in 2015. And we continue to do so at a similar rate every year. Lives that may have found other choices had they received the support and care, I believe, is all of our birthright. A verse in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes 4, says, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of 3 strands is not quickly broken." You sometimes see couples, and I do as a wedding officiant, create a braid from ribbon or cord at their weddings. Each partner represents 2 strands of that cord, and the third is representative of what they consider spirit, what some people know as God, what many of us might feel in moments of loving connection, whether that might be with nature, with our nearest and dearest people in our lives, or in the shared experience of congregational life at its best. Today, I can share that while depression and anxiety has never fully left me, I have resources, strong resources to turn to in difficult moments, but I did not get here by myself. I don't know if I would be the person I am or where I am today without the Unitarian Universalist community on a number of levels, but in this aspect of my life particularly so. It was through a support group within a Unitarian Universalist congregation for those who were living with or who had family living with mental illness that I began to take charge of my own mental health. It was alongside the love and care of members of that group that I found my first therapist, that I got through fear of stigma that kept me from trying medication, and learned how life-giving it was to be with other people who validated the hard-to-share experiences, not despite of, but as part of our worth and dignity. Having others value and celebrate my presence on this earth just as I was, and who believed that I could create a healthier, more whole life for myself, helped propel me to do it. And in turn, I learned how it was to create peer relationships and provide support to others. This type of welcome, encouragement, and validation to me seems absolutely vital in times such as this. National events are serving as greater triggers to those of us with a disposition to mental illness, and I can only imagine that new fear-based policies may result in another uptick of mental health conditions. The Reverend Barbara Myers, who has led the Unitarian Universalist Mental Health Ministry with the Mission Peak UU congregation in Fremont, California, shares that since the 1990s, there has been an explosion of studies on religion and how it affects physical and mental healing. Most of it suggests that religious commitment plays a significantly beneficial role in preventing mental and physical illness, improving how people cope with mental and physical illness, and help facilitate recovery from illness. She continues that in particular, Unitarian Universalism lends itself to support healthy practices, since both spiritual and rational worldviews are embraced in our sources of religious truth as Unitarian Universalists. Further, religious characteristics that have been found to be harmful enough to mental health, including guilt, devaluing human nature, punishment in hell, and paranoia about evil, are not generally true of Unitarian Universalists. From this, I find we are particularly poised to be part of faith movement efforts to fight against misinformation, indifference, and ridicule of people living with mental illness. Mental illness, brain illness, and mental disorders often place an individual and their family on the margins of society to be excluded and isolated. Can you imagine what is happening to people living on the margins already, and how current administration policies are just compounding trauma and anxiety and fear? Our calling is to open the doorway of inclusion, to become centers of healing and growth. For me, my faith, this faith, is that essential third strand in the cord that helps make me stronger. Elizabeth Resser wrote, "I wonder if I hadn't gotten it wrong. Maybe one could defy the odds and frolic through life without a big fall. When I noticed someone teetering near the edge, I would pray for her to walk around the abyss. Now I pray for something different. I pray that each of us stays awake as we fall, I pray that we choose to go into the abyss willingly and that our fall is cushioned by faith. Faith at the bottom, we will be caught and taught and turned towards the light. I pray that we don't waste precious energy feeling ashamed of our mistakes or embarrassed by our flaws. After years of teaching, Lesser says, I know only a few things. One is this. We are chunks of dense matter that need to be cracked open. Our errors and our failings are chinks in the heart's armor through which our true colors can shine. As an act of public witness, and in support of curing the virus of stigma, I'd like to invite you to raise your hand if you or a loved one is living with mental illness. Thank you. I pray that each of us is provided the support and care we need to stay awake as we fall. I pray that we find ourselves able to go into that abyss willingly and that our fall is cushioned by our faith. Faith that at the bottom, those within our communities will catch us and teach us and help us as we turn ourselves towards the light. The only way out is through. May we be that example that no one of us must travel the journey alone. Amen. Amen. And blessed be. Our closing words are adapted from the pop singer Kesha's song Rainbow. We can't lose hope. What's left of our hearts is still made of gold. Our scars make us who we are, so when the winds are howling strong and we think we can't go on, may we hold tight, look to the skies, and find a rainbow baby. Trust us, we know that life is scary, but may we put those colors on and paint a better world together, starting tonight. Go in peace and unrest, and always with abiding love. Amen and blessed be.